50 men stand in formation on a misty Polish morning. Their commander, a grandfatherly figure nicknamed Papa Trap, delivers orders that will haunt them forever. Round up 1,800 Jews from a nearby village and shoot them. His voice breaks. Tears stream down his weathered face. Then he does something unprecedented in military history. He offers anyone who feels unable to participate the chance to step aside. No punishment, no consequences. Out of 500 men, only 12 step forward. The rest remain silent, bound by invisible chains of conformity and peer pressure. By evening, 1,500 people, men, women, children, infants, lie dead in the forest. These weren't SS fanatics or ideological zealots. They were middle-aged dock workers, truck drivers, and clerks from Hamburg. Average age, 39. Most had joined the police force specifically to avoid military combat. Within a year, they would murder 38,000 Jews directly and deport 45,000 more to death camps. How does an ordinary person become a mass murderer? Reserve Police Battalion 101 didn't begin with genocide. They started with mundane duties like guarding POW camps. Their first moral compromise came in 1940 when they forcibly evacuated Polish families for ethnic Germans. Some witnessed elderly Poles shot because they were too burdensome to transport. By November, they guarded the Lodz ghetto with orders to shoot Jews approaching the fence. Each action normalized the next, like slowly turning up heat on a frog that doesn't jump because change feels gradual. In 1941, they deported Hamburg Jews to eastern ghettos, learning secondhand about mass killings at destinations. This maintained psychological distance. They weren't pulling triggers themselves. By June 1942, when ordered to Poland for direct killing operations, the slow erosion of moral boundaries had prepared them for the unthinkable. After Józefov, these men constructed elaborate psychological scaffolding to continue functioning. A 35-year-old metalworker shot children whose mothers had been killed, justifying it as soothing to my conscience because without its mother, the child could not live. He used the German word Erlösen, a term meaning redemption or salvation. Murder became mercy in his twisted logic. Others focused obsessively on technical details, loading, aiming, firing, reducing genocide to a procedural checklist. Major Trapp encouraged dehumanization by reminding them that German women and children were dying in Allied bombing raids. The victims weren't people anymore. They were enemies outside the circle of human obligation. While only 12 initially refused, perhaps 10-20% eventually sought release from shooting duties, citing physical revulsion rather than ethical principles. Two crucial changes made continued killing psychologically bearable: shifting from direct shooting to deportation, death occurred out of sight, and using Tronicki auxiliaries for the worst tasks. This division of labor proved devastatingly effective. By August 1942, just weeks after Józefov, 2nd Company had hardened dramatically. At Amazi, Lieutenant Gnadrunk, and a Nazi by conviction, displayed unprecedented sadism, forcing elderly bearded Jews to crawl naked while officers beat them with clubs. The execution process had become terrifyingly efficient. Jews ran between guards to mass graves where intoxicated auxiliaries shot them, subsequent victims climbing over corpses. Approximately 1,700 Jews died in half the time Józefov took. The psychological burden on killers had decreased. Hewis did most shooting, the process was depersonalized, men rotated quickly through firing squads. Unlike Józefov, no option to step out was offered, removing the burden of choice. By October, the battalion helped deport 27,000 Jews to Treblinka in 8 operations, killing another 1,000 during roundups. Captain Wolof even brought his pregnant bride to witness a deportation, causing indignation among men who felt shame having a woman see their actions. The most chilling detail? After the main deportations, security police announced new identity cards would spare bearers from execution. When desperate Jews emerged from hiding, at least 200 were collected and shot. By mid-November 1942, the battalion worked to make the region Judenfrei, free of Jews. They swept forests, discovered underground bunkers, and executed people with neck shots. One policeman estimated 500 deaths in a single October operation. Jewish workers on German estates were systematically eliminated. At Gutjahbon, 30 workers were trucked to forests and shot, despite administrators' complaints about losing labor. At Gutpanwitz, estate managers called Captain Hoffman to shoot surplus refugees. These patrols became so routine, policemen called them their daily bread. The callousness grew striking. One officer complained at breakfast that he had not yet killed any Jews. Men joked about eating the brains of slaughtered Jews after executions. Volunteers for killing squads often exceeded needs. Murder had become normalized, bureaucratized, routinized, just another day at the office. November 1943 witnessed the war's single largest German killing operation against Jews. Operation Harvest Festival, Erntefest, claimed 42,000 victims in the Lublin district, surpassing even Babi Yar. Following uprisings in Warsaw, Treblinka, Bialystok, and Sobibor, Himmler ordered the elimination of all remaining Jewish workers in one coordinated surprise attack. Engineers supervised digging 3-meter-deep zigzag trenches disguised as air raid protection. On November 3rd, the massacre began at Majdanek. Battalion 101 helped march Jews from surrounding camps, forming tight security cordons. Between 16,500 and 18,000 Jews were executed that day. The SS erected loudspeakers, blasting music to mask execution sounds. Jews were forced to strip naked and march to trenches in groups, where SD squads waited with machine guns. The next day, 14,000 more died at Poniatowa camp. Bodies were stacked on massive iron rail grills and burned. Many policemen, hardened by previous actions, reported being physically sickened by the scale. With Erntefest's completion, Battalion 101's direct participation in the final solution ended. Their final tally? Approximately 38,000 Jews shot directly, 45,000 deported to Treblinka, totaling at least 83,000 victims. Fewer than 500 men. Over 160 victims per battalion member. Ordinary men. Extraordinary evil. Why did most become killers, while only 10 to 20% refused? Various explanations exist: wartime brutalization, racism, obedience, conformity, but none fully satisfies. These weren't ideologues. By age, geography, and background, they were the least likely mass murderers. Stanley Milgram's experiments showed 2/3 of ordinary people would administer dangerous shocks when directed by authority. Philip Zimbardo's Stanford prison experiment revealed randomly assigned guards rapidly developed brutal behaviors. 1/3 became cruel, a middle group followed rules, and less than 20% emerged as good guards. The battalion mirrored this distribution precisely. Breaking ranks meant leaving dirty work to comrades, an asocial act, refusing one's share of collective obligation. Most non-shooters claimed they were too weak rather than too good to kill, legitimizing toughness and posing no moral challenge to the regime. Photographs show outdoor dinners with wives, musical performances, Himmler's prescribed comradely get-togethers to lead men back to the beautiful realm of German spiritual life after difficult tasks. The fundamental problem isn't explaining why different Germans eagerly killed Jews, but why ordinary people, people like us, willingly committed history's most extreme genocide. In a world of ubiquitous war, powerful government legitimization, and intense peer pressure, modern governments will rarely fail to transform ordinary people into willing executioners. The true horror isn't that they were monsters, it's that they were so much like us.